it's my patiently waiting music. That's what that's all about.
I like that a lot.
You do it sort of
It's
like on hold, but not quite. 100 Parks, 5,000 Ideas. It is the sequel to the best-selling 50 States, 5,000 Ideas. And the man with all the ideas is Joe Yogers, who joins us. He's an editor, writer, photographer for 3 decades for this National Geographic book. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
We are doing great and all excited to pack our bags and head out to a park near or far. Let's talk about, I was looking through here, and, you know, when we always like to look to see how the locals are represented, and here you've got the Cuyahoga Valley National Park.
That's right.
As one of those in here as well. And, of course, one of the keys for that park has to be its railway. Are there many parks like that that have sort of unique transportation through them, outside of maybe kayaking and those type of things?
Not necessarily trains, but you have a lot that have unique boat or watercraft, ferries that take you around different places, either on lakes or harbors or rivers. Cuyahoga is fairly unusual in the sense that it has a train running the length of the park, and the fact that the train line along with the canal is the reason why the park is even there. So it's one of the more unusual parks in that regard.
You know, you have parks that are based on some sort of natural thing like Niagara Falls or something like that, or geysers that are taking place. Here's one that has to do with sort of industry or an Ohio Erie Canal. There was sort of the reason for it is because of the settlement and sort of industry, actually.
That's right, yes. The corridor between Cleveland and Akron area and during the Industrial Revolution. And for 30 years, the canal was how people got their goods and commodities back and forth until the railroads came along. And the railroad they built right next to the canal, and that took over until there were interstate highways. And you probably know the background of the park is that By the 1960s, both the railroad and the canal were basically disused, and the federal government took over and spent basically the better part of 30 years cleaning up the industrial and toxic waste that was left behind in order to turn it into one of the great parks in the entire Midwest.
Do you see things? That's one where you have a thing that you've kind of reclaimed the land for the park. Are there ones now that parks are suddenly... man is interfering with what was once beauty, and we're trying to not get down that path.
Well, some of the new national monuments that were declared in the West, and in particular southern Utah, where there's been a back and forth about really over the last 20 or 30 years over whether the land should be used for oil and gas extraction and mining and things like that, or it should just be set aside as pristine land for a park. And these new national monuments are not necessarily run by the National Park Service. Some of them are Forest Service, and some of them are run by the Bureau of Land Management. So you do have tussles like that, and you have ongoing tussles like that in Alaska with land use. But for the most part, most parks that are already set aside are pretty safe from anything like that happening to them, from encroachment. The bigger factor is how many people want to go to some of these parks and how the Park Service, whether it be the State Park Service or the National Park Service, handles this increased flow of visitors without impacting what they're going to see.
Well, thanks for your book, 100 Parks, 5,000 Ideas. You're inspiring us to get out there, but maybe spread it around. Find some places that are not on the top 10 list kind of thing. Can take us to some of your favorite parks that are in this book that maybe people don't know about.
That people don't know about? Well, one of my favorites is Wrangell St. Elias in Alaska, which is actually America's largest national park and one of its wildest. It's snow-capped volcanoes, glaciers, grizzly bears, whales in the Gulf of Alaska. It's got a little bit of everything nature-wise. Some of the other ones I really like, Adirondack Park in upstate New York, which was the last park I visited for this book last year. I had never been there before. I knew nothing about it, and I was kind of blown away at how much nature was still left in the state of New York. Some of the ones that I visited in Canada, if you're a dinosaur fan, Dinosaur Provincial Park in Alberta is one of the greatest places on the planet for dinosaur bones and going out and actually being able to participate in a dig with paleontologists. San Juan National Historic Site in Puerto Rico, which is the old Spanish fort at the entrance to San Juan Harbor, was one of the places I went to for this book that kind of blew me away also. The Black Hills of South Dakota, which is everyone knows it for Mount Rushmore, but it also has amazing caves. It has Deadwood, the Wild West city. It has Custer State Park, which is the largest wild buffalo herd left in the United States. A lot of things in the Black Hills. So those are some of my favorites that are not necessarily that well known beyond the regions where they are.
Joe, how did you become aware of so many wonderful different options?
Well, luckily I had parents that when we grew up, every summer we took a road trip, and it was always to a string of national parks or specific national parks. So we would take these long road trips up the Pacific Coast, up to Wyoming and Montana, over to New Mexico and Texas, and that was my first familiarity with them. During my college days, I worked summers in Las Vegas at the airport, and I would spend all my days off going to national parks in Utah and Arizona and California and Nevada. And so that was kind of my introduction to it. And then just through my job over the years, I mean, I've worked for National Geographic for 20 years now. And between that and CNN travel and some of my other work, I've had a chance to visit a lot of parks in the course of other assignments. And so collectively speaking, over many years, I was able to visit a lot of different kinds of parks.
We were talking today with Joe Yogurst, editor, writer, photographer. The book is called 100 Parks, 5,000 Ideas. What if you want to go to parks, but you're not an outdoors person? How can you enjoy those type of things as well if you don't really want to rough it, as it were?
Well, some of them are kind of indoor parks, especially the major urban parks, some of which are national parks and some of them belong to the cities. Central Park has its outdoor places, but Central Park in New York also has the Metropolitan Museum of Art and the American Museum of Natural History, and where you can spend days indoors without ever having to step into any kind of nature. This is also true of Golden Gate National Recreation Area in San Francisco, which has a lot of great museums. The National Mall in Washington, D.C., which is technically a national park, but that's also where all the Smithsonian museums are. So there are ways to enjoy parks indoors, too.
How did you get so many pictures without the people in it? Or is it just so vast in these places that there's always spots where it's just you and nature?
In most cases, even in the most crowded parks, you can get a picture without people in it because somewhere there's a corner of that park where there's no one but yourself.
I just thought maybe these were like 5 a.m. shoots or something like that, you know, when you get there before anybody.
No, even in the middle of the day, you can find places, which is one of the things I really enjoy about parks and that I seek out, is that I'm the only person I can see.
Let's talk about one special national park, Gettysburg National Military Park. This is kind of, yeah, a unique of, and it's really a park like no other. Talk a little bit about that and maybe what people experience there.
Well, it's a battlefield park, it's fairly large because the battle is scattered over a large area. I think it has, personally, for my personal taste, if you discount the Smithsonians and places like that, I think it has the best museum of any national park unit. It's a fairly new museum that covers not just Gettysburg Battlefield, but the whole Civil War and the run-up to the Civil War in the United States and the aftermath. I think it's a marvelous museum that you start with at the visitor center that you could spend hours at alone. I also like the fact that during the summer, basically from spring to fall, almost every day, and especially on weekends, there's some kind of living history reenactment going on that's reenacting some part of the battle, even if it's just an encampment by people who reenactors dressed up as one side or the other. So it's not just a static park, it's a very active park because of these reenactors and the living history element to it. Part of the park is where Lincoln delivered his Gettysburg Address. There's a very interesting old town that's right in the middle of the park, Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, which is preserved to a large extent like it was in the 1860s and 70s. It has a whole history of its own, both in the battle and afterwards. And it's a fascinating part of Pennsylvania that it's in, with a lot of other things to do around there.
The book is called 100 Parks, 5,000 Ideas. Joe Yogerst, our guest this morning. Joe, thanks for sharing all it with us, and we look forward to our travels to all these different parks throughout the country. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was fun.